Well, we will go ahead and get started. It's quarter till, so we'll dig into the subject. My original plan was to complete this in one Bible study, but I felt it best not to do that today, so what we will do is lay the groundwork for what we'll finish up with next time. So you'll have an understanding of the beginning portions of it, and then we will finish and determine how the Jews came to celebrate the Passover on the 15th instead of the 14th. So we will explain that hopefully in two sessions. So I'm just warning you, and and there is a lot of material, so we'll go ahead and launch into it. So let's begin in Numbers chapter 9, verses 1 through 5. Numbers chapter 9, verses 1 through 5. In chapter 9, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Now the Lord spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai in the first month of the second year." So this is a year after Israel has come out of Egypt that is being discussed here. And a year before this, the people of Israel had kept the Passover and put the blood on the lintel and on the doorpost. And so that was while they were still in Egypt. They're now out of Egypt and they're progressing through the wilderness. So a year after they had come out of the land of Egypt, saying, "Let the children of Israel keep the Passover at its appointed time." So they're continuing to keep the Passover. They know what the appointed time is. So they're going to keep the Passover at that time. "On the 14th day of this month at twilight, you shall keep it at its appointed time. According to all its rites and ceremonies, you shall keep it." So Moses told the children of Israel that they should keep the Passover. And they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the first month at twilight in the wilderness of Sinai, according to all that the Lord commanded Moses. So the children of Israel did. So it's a year after Israel has left Egypt and God has given them instruction to continue keeping the Passover. So they're undertaking that ceremony here in Numbers. So as you think about that, it says that they were to keep it on the 14th day of the first month at twilight. So they're a year out of Egypt, and they're going to keep the Passover just as they did the year before. And Exodus 12, verse 14, is where God lays out how this is to be kept. It says, "So this day shall be to you a memorial." It's something that is to be ongoing and kept with regularity. And as we keep the Passover each year, we're reminded that it is a memorial. It is a memorial of Christ's death until he comes. It says, "And you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord throughout your generations. You shall keep it as a feast by an everlasting ordinance." So the people of Israel are still keeping the Passover as instructed in Exodus chapter 12 in the second year after they left Egypt. So when it says that you're to keep it at twilight, what does that mean? It's discussing the timing. And the people of Israel in Egypt, when they kept their first Passover, they kept it at the beginning of the 14th. And when it says at twilight, there is a time, and it says between the two evenings. Well, there is at twilight, the sun sets, there is a period of time where it's not totally dark. The sun is set, it's not totally dark. So that time between sunset and when it's totally dark is that period of time in which the lambs were to be slaughtered. And each family would select a lamb, and each family would make the sacrifice. That's how it was in Israel on the first Passover, and how it continued to be here at the second Passover after they had come out of Egypt. So they slaughtered the Passover lambs at the beginning of the 14th between sunset and dark. And as you look at how we keep the Passover, we keep the Passover at the beginning of the 14th. that the beginning of the day, and it begins between sunset and dark, and we try to begin the Passover service at sunset. So, as you see this is the case. How did the Jews come to have an afternoon temple Passover sacrifice? How did that come to be instituted? Because you see clearly what they did at the beginning, but that was not what was taking place with everybody in Christ's time, and it isn't what takes place with the Jews today. So they're keeping Passover when we're eating the night to be observed. And they're calling it Passover when in fact we know it's not Passover. It is the first day of unleavened bread. The days of unleavened bread have begun at sunset when they're keeping Passover. So what happened to bring this about? So what the goal is here with this study and the next one is to understand how that came to be. So we know clearly when the lambs were sacrificed in ancient Israel. So again, how did the Jews come to have an afternoon temple Passover? Because what was happening at Christ in Christ's time? We'll see that here shortly. How did the Jews to come to observe the Passover on the night of the 15th instead of the night of the 14th? How did that happen? Did they just decide that on their own, or were there events that took place that helped to bring that about? So did the afternoon temple sacrifice replace the domestic Passover sacrifice at the beginning of the 14th? Is that a change that's sanctioned in the Scriptures? Or were both Passovers observed simultaneously for a period of time? So, how did the Jews come to call the Feast of Unleavened Bread Passover, as indicated in Luke chapter 22, verse 1? So, how did the Jews come to call the Feast of Unleavened Bread Passover? You look at Luke 22, verse 1, and it reads, "Now the Feast of Unleavened Bread drew near, which is called Passover." So as you look at the way they've come to name it, then Passover, Days of Unleavened Bread, they're not distinct. They're all melded together. And when you're keeping Passover on the first day of Unleavened Bread, it's pretty easy for them to all be one observance, which is not correct. So how did the Feast of Unleavened Bread come to be called Passover? In Exodus chapter 12, as you read through there, it gives you two distinct observances. One on the 14th, which is called Passover. And then it goes through that and explains what you're to do. And then in about verse 13 or 14 in Exodus 12, it talks about the Days of Unleavened Bread. And it's something that is separate and distinct. So how did all these changes come about? And that's what we're going to be looking at in the study today and next at the beginning of next month. And the fundamental question we will address is, how did the Jews come to observe a temple Passover? And by temple Passover, I mean people would bring their lambs to the temple and the officials at the temple would slaughter all the lambs. So you would come, they'd slaughter the lamb, they'd give you back the lamb, and you would go home and roast it and eat it. It was all done by the officials at the temple. And it was something that became established in Judah and eventually was adopted as common practice, as we'll see. So the first question, at the time of Christ, did some Jews observe the Passover at the beginning of the 15th? Let's go to John chapter 18. John chapter 18, and let's look at verse 24. John chapter 18, verse 24. So here Christ is arrested, and in verse 24 it says, "Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest." So Christ has been arrested. He's being tried. The Sanhedrin is examining him, and he first of all went to the father of the family, Annas, who had been the high priest in the past, and he talked to him, then he went to Caiaphas. So he's been arrested, and he's going through that process. Verse 28, it says, then they led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium. So after they had examined Christ, the Sanhedrin sent him on to the Romans. And they're going to advocate that Christ be executed. So he led Jesus from Caiaphas to the praetorium, which is probably in the Castle Antonia there in the city of Jerusalem. And it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the praetorium. They didn't want to go into the praetorium. And why is that? Because they would be defiled. And if they were defiled, they couldn't eat the Passover. So they didn't want to go intermix in that building with the Romans who they saw as unclean. As I said, it goes on to say there in that verse, it says, lest they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. So, if you recollect in the story, Christ has already eaten the Passover and established the Passover symbols. And it's exactly the pattern that took place in the book of Exodus with the first Passover and the second Passover. And yet here they are doing something that's very different from what was originally established. And they're worried about being defiled, which is, to me, a joke. Here you are trying this guy and killing him for no legitimate purpose, and you're worried about being defiled? They were obviously missing something. So anyway, it's the early morning time on the daytime portion of the 14th, and they're, as I said, they're worried about being defiled because they want to take the Passover. They had obviously not eaten it, but they were going to eat it on the 15th. And this had already become established practice among the Jews. So in summary, John 18, verse 28, and history tell us that at the time of Christ, many Jews observed the Passover at the beginning of the 15th. The second question, how did that observance begin? How did that originate? Was it a commandment from God? Did God change the commandment and this is the new way of doing it? Or was it a commandment of men? A traditional thing? Or something that God instituted. So before we fully answer that question, let's go back to the tabernacle in the wilderness. We know that because of fear and disbelief, Israel didn't enter the promised land in the year that God delivered them out of Egypt. So they didn't want to go in, and God said, okay, I'm not going to make you go in. You're going to ride it out for another 40 years and suffer walking through the wilderness until all of you are dead. And then those who have conducted themselves rightly and those who are 20 years and younger, you will enter the land. So they had to wander. And during those 40 years of wandering, God instructed Moses to build a tabernacle. And the instructions for building the tabernacle are given in the book of Exodus. And God also gave instruction about animal sacrifices which were to be offered at the tabernacle. He spells out that there are to be daily sacrifices, there are weekly sacrifices, there are sacrifices on the new moons, and there are special sacrifices associated with the holy days. So there are clear sacrifices that are to be offered, and God lays them all out very carefully. The instructions concerning those tabernacle sacrifices were given in Numbers 28 and 29. And we're not going to read through them, but if you do take the time to read through them, what you're going to find out is there is no sacrifice associated with Passover mentioned. It's never mentioned in conjunction with the tabernacle. But God's very specific about other sacrifices that are to be made at the tabernacle. So there is no tabernacle Passover sacrifice. The Passover lambs in the individual households at the beginning of the 14th, as God had instructed, following God's instruction in Exodus 12. So each family would continue to make that sacrifice in their own home or share the lamb with a neighboring family as they had done in Exodus chapter 12. So during the entire 40-year period in the wilderness, there is no indication that the lambs were sacrificed at the tabernacle. And that was the place of central worship for the people of Israel. And there's no instruction to do that. The first mention of the Passover after Moses died was in Joshua chapter 5. Joshua chapter 5, the Passover is again mentioned as they are coming into the land and the conquest is about to begin. Joshua chapter 5, verse 9. It says, "Then the Lord said to Joshua, 'This day I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. Therefore, the name of the place is called Gilgal to this day.' Now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho." So here we see a consistent pattern of keeping the Passover. Just like in Exodus 12, they're going to slaughter the Passover lamb and it's going to be done at twilight. When the sun goes over the horizon and it's sunset, that time between sunset and darkness is when the Passover sacrifice was to be made. The same wording as you find in Exodus chapter 12. So they're making the sacrifice between the two evenings. So you've got a consistent pattern there from Exodus 12 throughout the 40 years. And as they come into the land, they haven't forgotten that pattern. They continue to carry that out. And the tabernacle was with them. It doesn't talk anything about going to the tabernacle and making sacrifices there. So we can see that they were still doing the Passover sacrifice at the time God designated to Moses in Exodus 12. And then as you look at, it talks about at twilight, now the fact that this word at, which is for, represents sunset, was sunset that began the 14th and not the sunset that ended the day is substantiated by verse 11. Joshua chapter 5 verse 11, it says, "And they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover." So you have the Passover and then the next day they begin eating of the parched grain and the unleavened bread on the very same day. And that would be the 15th day of the first month. So verse 10 also tells us that they kept or observed the Passover on the plains of Jericho. As I said, there's no indication they all brought their lambs to the tabernacle and they made the sacrifice. So That's it for the Passover until you get down to the time of Solomon and David. The tabernacle was in place for over 400 years, all the way up to the reign of David's son Solomon. And during that 400-year period of time, there is no mention of Israel ever sacrificing the Passover lambs at the tabernacle. You can't find a mention of it. There's also no instruction from God to sacrifice the Passover lambs at the tabernacle. So we come down to the time of David and Solomon. And we know that David wanted to build the temple, but God did not allow him to do so because it says he was a bloody man. But he was able to accumulate all of the materials to undertake the building of the tabernacle. And then Solomon continued on and built the tabernacle. And once the temple was built, they did away with the tabernacle. But it had been around all that time, and it was only in the time of Solomon that it was replaced. So some questions. When were the Passover lambs first sacrificed at the temple? Who commanded that? Why was it commanded? Was there a reason for that command? Was it commanded by God, or was it commanded by a king of Judah? If commanded by a king of Judah, why was that command given? Why did they establish keeping the Passover at the temple? Solomon, in the fourth year of his reign as king, about 480 years after God led Israel out of Egypt, began to build the temple, as it mentions in 1 Kings 6, verse 1. The temple was dedicated at the time of the Feast of Tabernacles. There was a seven-day dedication of the altar, and that was followed by 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles. And this is mentioned in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 8. At that time, Solomon kept the feast 7 days, and all Israel with him, a very great assembly from the entrance of Hamath to the brook of Egypt. And on the eighth day, they held a sacred assembly, for they observed the dedication of the altar 7 days and the feast 7 days. And so this temple was built. They made the sacrifice and honored God by keeping the feast. And then it goes on to tell us how Israel prospered. And Israel was very prosperous, probably the most prosperous nation on the face of the earth. And if you look at the time and what took place at that time, Israel was a very prominent nation, and Solomon was a prominent king. Things were going well for Israel, but sadly that did not last, because the next chapter tells us about Solomon losing his way morally. We know that because of his sin, God took away his rule and allowed one of his servants, Jeroboam, to take over and rule the northern kingdom. However, God did save part of the kingdom, a small portion of the kingdom, one nation, for Solomon's son Rehoboam. After Solomon's death, the kingdom was divided into the northern and southern kingdoms, and both kingdoms continued to follow the path of worshiping foreign gods and goddesses. So they moved away from God, and they began to adopt pagan practices, the very practices God said, don't go there. And the practice continued throughout the northern kingdom of Israel, ending with their destruction by Assyria. And as you look at the kings of Israel, there wasn't a one of them that was a righteous king. Not a one of them was loyal to God. And they none of them led Israel back to God. They led Israel away from God. But Judah, the southern kingdom, did have a few bright spots. That there were some kings that attempted to turn Israel back in the right direction. And they would put them on the right track, and it seemed they would get on the right track through their leadership, and it would not be long until they would abandon the right path. They would turn from the right path. Which caused God great unhappiness. One of the worst kings of Judah was a king by the name Ahaz. If you want to look at a faithless person, Ahaz is the guy. He had no faith whatsoever, and even when God offered him, I will do a miracle for you, you name the miracle and I'll do it for you in order to increase your faith. No, I don't want to do that. So he wouldn't. It's kind of an amazing thing. And we need all this history to understand what's taking place with the Passover in Christ's time. So to understand why they're making the Passover sacrifice at the temple. Was that just something some king came up with for no reason at all? So we'll see how this came about. So let's go to 2 Chronicles chapter 28. 2 Chronicles chapter 28, and let's look at verses 1 through 4. It says in chapter 28, Ahaz was 20 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. But he did not that which was right in the sight of the Lord, like David his father. For he walked in the ways of the kings of Israel, and made also molten images for Balaam. Moreover, he burnt incense in the valley of the sons of Hinnom and burnt his children in the fire. After the abominations of the heathen whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel, he sacrificed also and burnt incense in the high places and on the hills and under every green tree. So what Ahaz did is he led Judah into full tilt Baal worship. So they had messed around with it before, but Ahaz went all out and Israel followed him into all out Baal worship. And that would have included leading Judah into observing the feast of Baal. So, you may not have heard of this, but Baal had feast. So we'll take a look at this. We'll look at, and this is a historical reality. We may not be aware of it, but Baal did have feast. And a question, did the feast of Baal parallel and counterfeit the feast of God? Did the feast of Baal parallel and counterfeit the feast of God? How easy was it for Israel to be led into Baal worship? It always seemed they went back to Baal worship. What, didn't it? Why was it so easy for them? There were things about it that were attractive, which we'll look at here. Here's a quote from the book Religions of the Ancient Near East, page 83. Religions of the Ancient Near East, page 83. Sacrificial meals were regularly set out for the deities every day, but there were special days which required extra sacrifices and special ceremonies. Special list marked lucky and dangerous days. So they had extra sacrifices given and special ceremonies that took place on special days. And there were lucky and dangerous days. There were certain days according to Baal worship that were unlucky and dangerous. And two of those days were the 14th day of the month. So the 14th day of the month was, according to Baal worship, was unlucky. And as was the 21st day of the month. They were considered evil and dangerous. Evil and dangerous. And the question is, why would that be? Why might that be? A question, what significant event occurred on the 14th in the story of Israel? What significant event took place on the 14th in the story of Israel? Wasn't the 14th the day on which the firstborn of Egypt died? Would that have been considered an unlucky day by the Egyptians? I would say that's likely. We don't realize the impact of what took place there. And you think that they were going to forget that? I don't think so. And you have to realize the people in the Middle East knew what took place there because you had people involved in trade and travel, and they carried this message back to wherever they were traveling and where they came from. So people were aware of what took place in Egypt. And where you have every firstborn in the land killed, from the Pharaoh down to the lowest of the low in that society, along with the firstborn of animals, people are going to remember that. Then, what significant event occurred on the 21st day of the month? So Israel began to come out of Egypt on the 15th. The whole nation of Israel is moving out of Egypt, and they're coming out, and they make their way by the 21st to the Red Sea. So here comes Israel at the Red Sea. God opens the way for them. They pass through, and in charges the greatest army in the world at that time, and it's completely annihilated. There is no more Egyptian army. So the dynasty of Pharaoh is over, and there's some debate about whether Pharaoh died in the Red Sea, possibly did, possibly didn't. He's already lost his son, so he has no heir. His dynasty's over. And if he goes into the sea, he's completely wiped out. and people were aware of this. So again, the 21st was not considered a lucky day, especially by the Egyptians. So when did those who worship Baal celebrate their feast? When did those who worship Baal celebrate their feast? Again, from the same source I quoted earlier, it says special feast days in each month, like the day of the new moon, the first day of the month, and the day of the full moon, the 15th of the month. These were all special celebrations in Baal worship. Were there any particular months where there were especially significant observances? As you read up on Baal worship, there certainly were. The two main festivals of Baal were in the months of Nisan and Tishri. As Christians, are there any significant celebrations we have during those months? Absolutely. The first month and the seventh month, and a special feast beginning on the full moon, the 15th. The 15th of Nisan is when the Feast of Unleavened Bread begins. And yet, here's Baal worship having a feast at the same time. The 15th of Tishri is when the Feast of Tabernacles begins. Baal has an observance at that time as well. The next quote is from a Canaanite Phoenician sacred year calendar of lunar and solar festivals. In the first month of Nisan, they celebrated the first 2 weeks from the new moon to the full moon in Babylon. And the religious officials brought all the idol sculptors into one room and presented religious dramas about the deities. And if you go through history, you see these kind of things taking place in Christianity. And these dramas taking place to convey certain lessons to those who call themselves Christians. Dramas put on by the church. And then paraded the statues in litters or in carts along their sacred routes. You still see that today. People have these celebrations and they're carrying the idol with them, or it's riding in a cart. And that did not develop in the year 2019. That's been going on for thousands of years. And you can trace it all the way back to Baal. But, you know, you have variances and you have it being adopted into Christianity and you seek to Christianize it. So, what did they do on the full moon, Nisan 15, the first day of unleavened bread? This is interesting. It says, on Nisan 15, they sacrificed a lamb. When did Israel sacrifice the lamb? The night before. But they still have a lamb that they're sacrificing to Baal. The very ancient sacrificial holiday is conducted by the head of the family standing on the sacred high place to Baal facing west. A sacred mourning dance is performed around the sacrificial animal. The sacrifice takes place at dusk. When does the Passover take place? When it's done, all present kiss each other, and the meal takes place late that night on the 15th. They had a barley harvest festival. Before the festival, the people clean the home of all leavening and don't eat leavening for 7 days. Does that sound at all familiar? And this isn't describing God's festival, but Baal worship. They had a feast of unleavened bread. And the first barley sheaf, Omer, is offered to the temple and the gods. And a joyful procession dressed in white, which bears the Omer barley to the sacred high place. Because it is a full moon, they sing holy songs and dance sacred dances. So, is there something called a wave sheaf? Wave sheaf that is offered as the first offering to God before he can begin the barley harvest? Baal worship had their own barley harvest going. So, Baal worship included two main 7-day festivals. one in Nisan, which began on Nisan 15 on the full moon, and took place at the exact time as unleavened bread. With one exception, Nisan 14 was considered to be an unlucky day, so we're not going to do that, but we can do the rest of it. And if you were in Israel, would that be somewhat confusing? Here we have this competing religion that's been ushered in by Ahaz, and they're offering the same festival. What's the diff? If we do Baal, we do God. Aren't they all gods? It doesn't matter, does it? And then Baal worship also included a seven-day festival in the month of Tishri, in the seventh month, beginning on the 15th, at the same time as the Feast of Tabernacles. Could that be confusing? The main feast of Baal paralleled and counterfeited the Feast of Unleavened Bread and the Feast of Tabernacles. You know, Satan is the great counterfeiter. And through the system of Baal, he counterfeited what God did. And his goal in counterfeiting was not to lead people to the truth, it was to lead them astray. So the counterfeit, which is so close to God's festivals, made it easy to adopt Baal worship, which Israel was pulled into for most of their history. And as you look at Baal worship, Baal worship did not also include these ceremonies. It included many things that were sexual. So, I mean, we can keep the feast and we can be involved in sexual immorality? What could be better? And Israel was always attracted to that. And it always surprised me. Here is Israel walking through the wilderness. They get to the land of promise. They're almost ready to go in. And here comes Balaam cursing them. And his curses wouldn't work. So he said, okay, we'll get them to curse themselves by sending out the women of Moab and enticing them into sexual acts. And the people of Israel joined right in. And God punished them for that. But it's just like, okay, what are you guys thinking? How are you going to be taken in by this? Well, she was a good-looking girl. Yes, she probably was. But God said, maybe you need to keep that under control. And obviously they couldn't. So let's go back to Isaiah. And it's interesting what Isaiah has to say. And it's interesting to look at the context in which Isaiah speaks. Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 1. Isaiah chapter 1, verse 1. Okay. In verse 1 it says, the vision of Isaiah. So Isaiah was given a vision by God. And in what time period was that vision given to Isaiah? So the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. So part of the time when Isaiah was speaking was during the reign of King Ahaz. And he also spoke during the reign of King Hezekiah. And those two kings are of great importance in what we're discussing here. So Ahaz went into evil and false religion and was all in. And Hezekiah sought to turn that around. So let's look at verses 2 through 4. Here it says, hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. They've rebelled. God said they've rebelled against me, and is there any more blatant rebellion than turning to a false god, turning to Baal? Verse 3, the ox knows its owner, and the donkey its master's crib, but Israel does not know. My people do not consider. The people abandoned God, which God is citing. That's an unusual situation. How many people do that? You know, your ox knows its owner. It knows you. You're the one that gives it food, and the ox is always going to come to where you feed him. Same with the donkey. Verse 4 says, "Alas, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a brood of evildoers, children who are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord, they have provoked anger. The Holy One of Israel they have turned away backward." They've gone in a way that is alien to God. And they're turning away, including worshiping Baal on his new moons, on his full moons, on his special Sabbaths and festivals, which paralleled and counterfeited the festivals of God. It's hard to see that this being is going to give them a better deal, but that's how they saw it. Chapter 1, verse 10. It says, "Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the law of God, you people of Gomorrah. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices to me, says the Lord? I have had enough of burnt offerings and rams and the fat of fed cattle. I do not delight in the blood of bulls or lambs or goats." So he's asking them, what's the purpose of your sacrifices? They were making sacrifices, but they were doing it to Baal. They were sacrificing lambs and goats on their Passover, and it was Baal, to Baal, a counterfeit, similar to the real thing. And the people were religiously confused, and they had difficulty telling one from the other. So what sacrifices was God referring to that Israel was making? They were making sacrifices to Baal. And as you look at verses 12 through 14, it says, "When you come to appear before me, who required this from your hand to trample my courts? To bring no more futile sacrifices, incenses, and abomination to me, the new moons, the Sabbaths, and the calling of assemblies, I cannot endure iniquity and the sacred meeting. Your new moons and your appointed feast my soul hates. They are trouble to me. I am weary of bearing them." So what new moons and assemblies and Sabbaths and appointed feasts is God referring to that he hated? He's referring to the new moons, the Sabbaths, and appointed feast of Baal, which paralleled and counterfeited the true feast of God, and even included the sacrifice of lambs or goats, which we saw in verse 11. Now, what does this have to do with the temple sacrifice, with a temple sacrifice? It's the reason why it was interested. Instituted. It has everything to do with why that came about. And it was instituted at this very time in Judah's history, as we'll see, during the reign of King Hezekiah. So what we will do is next time we will look at King Hezekiah and what he instituted. And you have to realize that this was instituted because of the spiritual condition of the people of Israel. The people of Israel had turned from God and adopted Baal worship. And so Hezekiah sought to reestablish a covenant with God and the people of Israel, and in analyzing it, they thought the best way to do it was to set up a temple Passover. So we'll look at that next time. This was not only instituted by Hezekiah, but also Josiah, and we'll look at what they did and seek to understand more fully how the change came to be made. So thanks, everybody, for your attention, and hopefully you found that helpful, and you might keep it in mind because next month we will finish this up and help you to better understand how the change from what God established in Exodus 12 came about.